Welcome to A Sporting Discussion, your podcast and live video broadcast now talking sports of all sorts. My name's AJ Mithen, wearing a fantastic piece of sporting merch this week. I'm joined by Andrew Johnson. Now, Andrew, your test says negative, but how do you feel?
I've been out of the house twice today. I went for, I just checked. I've walked just under 20K so far today.
Oh,
so
wow. Okay.
I really enjoyed it.
So there's clearly nothing wrong with your lungs then. You've expelled all of the COVID-19 virus?
Well, yeah. So, yes, expelled the virus, but as I say that, I do have some residual breathing issues, but that's fine. That's just part of
perfectly
life.
Fine. Well, look, I'm happy to carry you again this week because you've put in the effort. You showed up crook last week, and
I'm not sure if you can see, and it's probably not as obvious, but my right eye, I got a little, I'm going to say a dust mite bite or a mite bite under my eyelid, and it puffed up beautifully, which was just a nice little cherry on the shit sandwich that was the last week.
And so you looked very, very special, and you felt very special as well.
I felt wonderful, but I didn't feel as good as you in your Bengals shirt. Am I right? Yes. Is that the Bengals?
Yes, the Cincinnati Bengals, the team of the town I've literally never been to in my life, but I support them wholeheartedly. Isn't it funny?
Why do you support the Cincinnati Bengals?
Because they were the team I kind of just liked when I started getting into the American football. Way back.
Is it because they were on TV more, or because players?
No, there was bugger all NFL on the TV back in the day. Andrew, you know, this is back in the 80s we're talking about.
It was just 49ers with
someone gave me a hat. One of our neighbors who were from they were from South Bend, Indiana, but for some reason they were Bengals fans, and they gave me a Bengals cap and kind of indoctrinated me. And there it was. So I've no idea if they ever had been to Cincinnati either, but they were Cincinnati fans. And yes, first time since 2015, Bengals are back in the playoffs. And you'll like this, Andrew. I know you like your stats. I think it was between 2009 and 2015 or something like that. Bengals made the playoffs every year, won and done every year, lost every first round game.
Oh, really?
Including when they'd had a bye and were the second seed in the American football conference. So things are going to be different this year. I can feel it. I was just saying to a friend of mine today, there's a big Melbourne Demons up and coming young youth about it. But we're not here to talk about how great the Cincinnati Bengals are.
I want to talk a little bit more about the Cincinnati Bengals.
Oh, okay.
Who are their major players? Will I know any of them? Keep in mind that I know Joe Montana.
Yeah, that's, let's say no.
Okay.
This is AJ Green. Who doesn't play for them anymore. He's in the playoffs playing for Arizona Cardinals. Yes, these things are expensive, man, so you don't just throw it out. This is why jerseys in the US with names on them are sold with a return guarantee that if your player gets traded within 18 months, I think it is, you can swap your jersey for another player of your choice.
That is awesome.
Yes, I quite like that. Joe Burrow is the quarterback at the moment. Jamar Chase, you would have, I've been annoying people about Jamar Chase all year, especially in my fantasy league, which I won, so I just had to get that on the record too. But enough of that, Andrew. We don't want to blow out the show today, and we've talked enough guff. I'm just putting on a show for the people who are watching. But if you are listening, remember you can listen to us via Twitter at @ASD_radio. We're live on facebook.com/asportingdiscussion. Contact us there. Remember, if you are watching live on Twitter, we can't see your comments on the live feed, so please make a comment under the post where the video is and we can see that there. Happy to see everyone's comments all the way through. And if you're listening to the audio version of this podcast, thank you very much. Don't forget, you can leave a voice message. We post the link a few times on @ASD_radio or facebook.com/asportingdiscussion or in the forum there as well. So if you want to leave us a message and get in the show yourself right here, we can get the comments through, but we can't get any audio yet. we'll open that up on a Twitter space or something in the future. But if you want to get involved with that, leave us a message, do something. But remember, if you are listening live on Twitter, we can't see your comments in the live stream, so comment under the main post.
And AJ, I can hear almost like a rubber ball bouncing. I don't think there's anything at my end which is wobbling on my desk, but I don't know if it's at your end or if it's just in my head. If it's a COVID symptom, but I can just hear a little.
That's probably my magical USB microphone.
Ah,
I hope it's not shaking back and forth too much.
That's all right. No, it just adds a little bit of ambiance to it. Now, AJ, you
would mute my microphone just one moment, and you.
I'm gonna ask you a question whilst this is going on. And yes, the rubber ball bouncing has disappeared whilst you've done that.
How's that? I am back.
You are back. I can hear you.
I am back. Continue.
So you were talking about stats. You were talking about one and done with the Bengals being out in the first week of finals for 6 or 7 years in a row. Now, I've got a maths question for you. I know that you're a big maths guy.
Hang on.
I know that you love probability.
Probability I love. Maths, because probability is estimating, and estimating is great.
Probability is maths. Everything is maths. The world is maths.
That's now, true. Everything AJ, is maths.
If I was to toss a coin, what are the chances of you calling heads or tails correctly?
50-50.
50-50. So, if we tossed a coin, let's say 16 times, how many of those do you think you would get correct?
How many times?
16.
I'd probably get 10.
Are you backing yourself? You think that you're...
Have you got a coin? Have you got a coin? Don't talk about it. Let's do this.
I do, actually. I will get a coin. The reason-
while Andrew does that, we have a comment through from Ian Harkin at SportsNut67 on Twitter saying he remembers way back watching the NFL on the ABC hosted by Don Lane, which was the introduction for a lot of Australians to American football. And he used to host the Super Bowl coverage, which always fell on the Australia Day public holiday Monday in Australia. That's Super Bowl, I think, is a week later than that this year. But, yes, Don Lane was... apart from being quite the entertainer, he was very passionate about getting the American football into the eyes of the Australian audience. All right, Andrew, have you got your coin?
I've got a coin. It's a 20-cent coin. I'm going to flip it up, catch it, and then flip it onto my hand. So it's not just going to be a flat.
Are you doing it 16 times? Because this is riveting.
16 times. Cool.
Tails.
Zero. Cool.
Tails.
One from two. Cool.
Tails.
One from three. Cool.
Tails.
One from four. Cool.
Tails.
One from five. Cool.
Tails.
Two from six. Cool.
Tails.
Three from seven. Cool.
Tails.
Four from eight. Cool.
Tails.
Four from nine. Call.
Tails.
Five from 10. Call.
Tails.
Five from 11. Call.
Tails. Come on, 50%.
Six from 12. There call. You.
Tails.
Six from 13. Call.
Tails.
Six from 14. Call.
Tails.
Six from 15. Call.
You guess.
No, I can't. I don't
Tails,
know.
Tails, Andrew.
Six from 16. So you had six from 12. You were doing good. Then six from 16. Now,
what are you trying to do here? What are you trying to do?
If you were the captain of the South African cricket team, you would have beaten the existing captain of the South African cricket team five times. They have won one of the last 16 coin tosses.
Wow. That is unlucky. That is very, very unlucky.
Mm-hmm.
Well, is it unlucky or what's you're the maths head between us? What are the probabilities? So it's supposed to be a 50-50 shot, but as you go further beyond one coin toss, Does that 50-50 change, or does it, you tell us?
So
you learn us good.
The 50-50 doesn't change. It's still a 50-50 chance. However, the chance of getting one correct and 15 incorrect is...
be astronomical, wouldn't it?
Extremely large. I'm not going to go into the permutation and combination equations, but it is extremely, extremely large. So I noticed that you had a strategy and stuck to it. So I do wonder whether Dean Elgar and the previous captains have done that as well and just gone, I'm sticking with tails because that's what works.
I think they're obviously nervous and shaken up, and they think they have to change it up every time.
Mm-hmm. But there is no difference. It's always 50%, but very, very bad luck for South Africa. 1 out of 16. So there you go. There's your maths for the day, AJ.
Oh, well. Best for the day. Well, thanks for that, Andrew. I hope everyone enjoyed that. Let's move on, shall we? We do have some time. We do have a lot of stuff to get through. And look, we talked Novak Djokovic uphill down Dale last week. We're not going to get stuck on it here, but he has won, in inverted commas, his case against the Australian Border Force, and is free to play in the Australian Open starting on, is it Monday? Next week, next Monday, Monday next week, whatever the day it is, the 20th.
I think so, but so I'm no legal guy, but it was what he won was, I believe, a procedural hearing against what happened when he landed, against the actual process and procedures when he landed. It's nothing.
He didn't win on the merits of his. Oh, that was silly. His argument, merits of the. Equipment he had, the permissions he had to get in.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yes. So he's off on a technicality, and
good on him.
If you were a cynical person, Andrew, you'd probably say that a dose of COVID-19 on the 16th of December, 6 days after entries had closed for the Australian Open, but conveniently 2 weeks before you'd have to arrive in Australia. You know, some people, not me, of course, and probably not you. I don't know what you think, but some people are saying that perhaps that is a cynical invention that Djokovic got support with, particularly as he has been photographed in the days immediately after supposedly testing for coronavirus, shaking hands with kids, accepting awards at the announcement of a new stamp. And it's also turning out at the moment that whoever filled out his visa form, there's no guarantee it was him. High rollers, you know, superstar athletes usually don't do their own paperwork, but someone has said, no, he didn't travel internationally in the last 14 days, but he has because he went to Spain. So, look, let's cut this down to it because we don't want to hang on. We all know Novak Djokovic is a jerk. We all know he has a coddled life with many, many enablers all around him, and the Australian Open is a big part of that too because they just want him to break their record. So are we seeing anything we didn't really expect here, Andrew, other than the bureaucratic intervention that the Australian government has so successfully deployed here?
No, not really. I did say last week that I thought that he wouldn't play merely because the exemption that he was going for was to not have to do quarantine on arrival. And I thought, naively apparently, that they would go, yeah, you're all right to stay in the country, that's fine, but because you don't meet the rules for quarantine-free arrival, you need to do your 14 days quarantine. I thought they'd do that. They still might, but yeah, they probably won't. And good on him.
Yeah.
I hope that they put
grift,
him on.
Grift is in the grift.
Yeah. But don't give him centre court. Give him court one, and give him the late afternoon game.
No, they won't. There's no way.
I know. But let the crowd.
Plus, you also remember last year the crowds that go to Djokovic's games aren't neutrals. They are 100% on his side. You remember they booed the lady who was saying, "Isn't it great we've got a vaccine now? And we're looking forward to trying to get back to normal." And people booed her. Yeah, that's the sort of. that's the sort of character that follows Novak Djokovic around. We all just need to sit down, pour a glass of water and speak some good sentiment into it, Andrew.
So, AJ, I want to move off Novak Djokovic.
Please.
But
please,
I want to stay on tennis, and I'll stay on COVID, and I'll go to Bernard Tomic. Did you catch up with Bernard Tomic today?
No, this is all new to me. I know he was trending on Twitter as you do in the classics, but I've got no idea why, because I don't really care. But let's have it.
So Bernard Tomic was in the qualifiers. He lost to Roman Safiulin, Russian, if my flags of the world are any good, but hey, they're not.
Apologies to Roman's family for that pronunciation.
6-1, 6-4 he lost, and when he was down 6-1, 2-1, there's footage of him just going, oh, I'm going to paraphrase, he's saying, this is ridiculous. We've got people who don't have to do PCR tests. They're going to have COVID for sure. This is ridiculous. I guarantee you that in 3 days I'm going to have COVID. I'll put money on it. Do you want to say to the chair umpires? I'll test positive. I'm telling you. It's like,
okay.
Yeah. He said, I'm sure in the next 2 days I'll test positive. I'm telling you, I'll buy you dinner if I don't test positive in 3 days. Otherwise, you buy me dinner.
Sounds to me like Bernie's been doing stuff that he knows might get him ronified, Andrew.
So the context of it, from what I can gather, is, so he's saying they're allowing players to come on court with rapid tests in their room. Come on, no official PCR testing. So he's saying people need to be PCR tested. We need to have that.
He wants the Schnauzer test. Okay.
He wants everyone to make sure that they are 100% clear, rather than just have the 90% certainty of the rapid test. Now, the timing of him coming out and saying that when he was down 6-1, 2-1, did that have anything to do with it? Maybe, maybe not.
So.
But, well, you look at, I think everything about Bernard Tomic is unfortunately seen through a lens of his past behaviour and his past comments. Mm. So, it's unfortunate.
Yes, he's coming from a long way back, isn't he?
He is, yeah. And look, it's no doubt that he's a talented tennis player. Like, there is absolutely no doubt about that.
He's
much better than me. I'll give him that.
He's made more money than us.
Yeah, and I would actually like to see the redemption arc of Bernard Tomic. I'd like to see him put the time in to really train and become a good quality, even if it's just like a top 50 player, make a few quarterfinals and semifinals here and there. That'd be great.
Though, does he? Doesn't need to.
Wow.
I've long stopped caring about what Bernard Tomic does in tennis and in life. He's a bigger waste of talent than Philippoussis, Kyrgios, even Leighton Hewitt to a point, but yeah, so what's the fallout from there? So he's
The fallout will be in the next couple of days,
whether he tests positive or not. Yes,
yeah, but so he's out. He's done. He's missed the qualifiers, and I mean, so Nick Kyrgios, he withdrew from the Sydney Tennis Classic because he has tested positive to COVID. Now, I'm not sure of my timelines here, but I believe his seventh day will be day two of the Australian Open. So as long as they put him on the second day, which they can in the first round, because the first round is a lot of matches and that goes over 2 and 3 days. So they should be able to get him there, and that'd be good. But yeah, whether it happens, who knows? But I'm looking forward to seeing Rafael Nadal play. He's been injured of late, but I think his comments against Novak Djokovic have added a little extra element to this year's tournament. I'm really keen to see Ash Barty play because she is in very good form in the lead-up tournaments. There's a whole bunch of lead-up tournaments going on at the moment, and I think she won today, may have lifted one of the trophies. So I wanted to ask a question, AJ, and this is something that I also will then lead into some comments made by Adam Zampa about the Big Bash, and it's around coverage. So I've said before on the show that I don't have terrestrial TV. I only have my app-based television. So I'm watching two cricket matches via KO at the moment. The tennis is not on KO. They are on...
It's on Stan Sport.
On Nine and Stan. So there's a couple of... I saw there's two channels on the Nine Now app, but there's also a bunch on Stan Sport. So I've actually not been watching any tennis when normally I would watch. I'd watch the... I'm going to get the names wrong and I'm going to get the locations wrong because they've changed over the years. But the Sydney International, like Memorial Drive in Adelaide, they had the Brisbane International. And it used to always be brilliant. You'd have the Hotman Cup, which I think used to be late December, early Jan as well.
Over something else now, isn't it? Is it still the Hotman Cup?
No, that's changed to I don't know what. But that do you think there has been less build up to the Australian Open this year, and I'll say last year as well, because of the lack of the TV channels, the mainstream TV channels, not showing the tennis, not showing those lead-up tournaments?
I don't think so. I think people had other things on their mind, particularly last year. And I think... Well, I don't know. It's... Australian Open's turning into the same people doing the same stuff, particularly on the men's side. So I don't know how much repeat business you get out of that.
So I guess
tennis crowds are a special type of people. They'll always be there. But a lot of people won't bother tuning in until it's around quarterfinal time or something like that, or if there's a game that goes to five sets and stretches long, they'll stumble across it, you know. But I'm not convinced, and the ratings are going to go through the roof, but I don't think people really are that interested in the lead-up stuff anymore because also last year so many of them were cancelled. Everything last year was moved to Rod Laver Arena after an initial kind of flourish that they were going to be moved to regional Victoria and have some tournaments around Bendigo, Mildura, those places. In the end, it just ended up Kooyong Classic got canned, Sydney International got canned, and they just had a couple of warm-up tournaments in Melbourne and then one afterwards for players who had arrived in Melbourne and then been tested positive, so they had to quarantine for an extra 2 weeks and missed the start of the tournament. So there was a... kind of makeup tournament for
players
who couldn't go in the Open. Now that's not happening this year, but it's the same kind of subdued lead-in because of the situation we're all in at the moment. I think tennis nuts are doing it because they're tennis nuts. We'd be doing it if we were tennis nuts, but I just don't think the passion is directed elsewhere right now.
I think that's a really good point that you made about about last year being such a disrupted lead-up, and so people didn't have that traditional, I'm going to watch this tournament and like these are going to be these tournaments on. And does it then only take 1 year of disruption for then people to not realise and forget that there used to be the lead-in tournaments? Like you would always go, I'll watch from White City, I'll watch that after dinner. In the lead up to Australian Open,
majority of the bigger players come straight from the Middle East, Dubai, and that where there's tournaments just before the Australian Open, so they don't necessarily need to play in these ones. We saw Ash Barty won a tournament. I think it was which I think was in, I think she won Brisbane, I think it was, or she pulled out of Brisbane. Whatever tournament she's in right now, she's pulled out of because she's wants to get prepped for the Grand Slam. So I think they're very, very much treated as warm-ups, where I know the, you know, Sydney and Brisbane and Canberra used to have one and all that would put all their efforts into it being a great show and all that. But, yeah, the it's purely pre-season stuff for the players.
No, so Ash Barty did – she played in the Adelaide International and she won
– won the singles and the doubles.
Yeah. Singles and the doubles final. And
yeah, and then she's recently pulled out of whatever tournament she was scheduled to be in. I can't remember. Sorry, I think it was Sydney or wherever. Yeah, she won that first one and then said, all right, that'll do for now. I'll get ready for an actual one, with all respect. But anyway, we will move on to cricket, Andrew. And before we do, just a reminder to everyone that you are listening, watching, however you do it, A Sporting Discussion on live on facebook.com/A Sporting Discussion, at ASD_radio on Twitter, also on our YouTube channel. We never say the URL because it's complete gobbledygook, but if you go to our website, asportingdiscussion.com.au, you will find beautiful links to all of those social pages that I just mentioned there. If you're listening to the audio version, you know where you got it, but make sure you tell everyone else where you get your podcasts from, because A Sporting Discussion is on just about every single platform. And we stuck our head up again this week, ever so briefly, Andrew, in the Apple charts, which doesn't mean a lot, but I always get a little bit chuffed about it, because we are up there among all of the corporate ones and the replayed radio shows and the celebrity ones and the ones that have massive budgets and talent behind them. So every now and then our little show pops its head up in those Apple charts. We appreciate that. So like, share, subscribe, tell your friends, all of that for A Sporting Discussion. Andrew, let's move to cricket and Adam Zampa's comments about the Big Bash. Now, we had a bit of a chat last week where I don't think very highly of the Big Bash at all. I know you love cricket in general about anything and you'll defend it to the death, but Adam Zampa's had some interesting comments today.
Yeah, so the Big Bash is too long, no longer fun, and star Australian spinner Adam Zampa has not ruled out withdrawing as the long season and life inside the competition's biosecurity bubble continues to take its toll. So this was after 13 Melbourne Stars players tested positive to COVID in the last fortnight. So he was one of those players, and he was in his hotel room for 7 days. Then, to try to catch up the matches, the Melbourne Stars played yesterday and they played today, and I think they're playing on Thursday. I think they're playing 3 games in 4 days or 3 games in 5 days. But Zampa has said, yeah, he actually has come close to pulling the pin. He said, I considered last week several times to get out of isolation and go home. That crossed my mind. It changes every day. I'm still not writing it off. I'm always going to put my mental health first. If I feel like I'm ever going to walk out, play a game of professional cricket, and I'm not up for it, then I know I need some time away. Mm. So that's one thing, and that's really good.
He is not the first player to comment on the length of the season and the drain that has on your enthusiasm for cricket, and that's not just in the last little while with all the COVID going around. That's ever since they extended the Big Bash season to, I think it's to 14 games from 8, I think it was. Yeah. Yeah, every lazy sports journal out there was writing the goose that killing the goose that laid the golden egg or something like that.
That's right. Yeah.
But I know you love your cricket. So tell us why Adam Zampa's wrong.
Oh no, he's not wrong. He's absolutely right. So James Pattinson has pulled out of the rest of the Melbourne Renegades games. Mm. Matthew Wade has just taken a break from the Hobart Hurricanes. And so you talked about players saying that it's too long. Glenn Maxwell was one of those either last year or the year before. And
Chris Lynn as well, Brisbane Heat's, yes. Chris Lynn said it as well in the very first time they extended it, which I think was 2018 or thereabouts, 18, 19. Yep. That would have been 18.
This time, Zampa said, Big Bash used to be a great time, a very good time. And unfortunately, with the world as it is at the moment, it's getting a lot harder. The season's probably too long, and it definitely feels like it's dragging on again. When it was an 8-game season, it actually felt like the cricket was more competitive because you had to play well straight away. That's the big part. So there's the mental health side of it, and it's brilliant that Adam Zampa is so upfront and always has been. He's one of the absolute best cricketers to listen to. Any interview that he does is worthwhile listening to. And there's a brilliant video on the Cricket Australia website about his home in country-ish New South Wales and the sustainability measures that he's putting into his like a mini farm. So it's really cool. Check that out. But him talking about being an 8-game season and feeling like the cricket was more competitive, that I think then has flowed through to all of the viewers because people have gotten a little bit of fatigue. The games don't mean as much. There are now 5 teams that can make the finals rather than 4. And
well, the games barely meant anything anyway. That was kind of a stagger to say, oh, this is so, you know, it was all hitting the eagle for TV. Now, there's been some interesting.
Always has been.
That's the thing. There was a doubleheader at the MC. There was a doubleheader at the MCG yesterday. The crowd total was 5,082 people, I think it was. Now, just going back 3-4 years before they extended the season, Melbourne teams were regularly getting in their tens of thousands. I think they got 80,000 for a Melbourne derby showdown, conquest, whatever you want to call it. But the crowds don't matter. And this is the thing. There was a few things on social media today from different cricket journos and sports journos in general saying, what's going on with the crowds at the Big Bash? But the Big Bash, the crowds are kind of a nice to have, aren't they? They're an add-on because this is a TV thing. And the reason why it hasn't stopped, like the NBL has taken a breath, the WNBL has taken a breath, the ABL went bailed out altogether of summer. But the reason it hasn't stopped is because they can't. There's too much money on the line for Cricket Australia here. Isn't that right?
Yeah, 100%. So the games that I've been to, I think it was $10, $15 a ticket. They're not making a huge amount from getting a good crowd in that. Just it's brilliant and it grows the game. And I love the fact that it is more affordable than a lot of other sports because it means that families can go and they can afford to go. But yeah, it was, always has been, always will be mostly in my mind, a TV event, a TV spectacle. And when it changed from state to franchise competition, then Channel 10 had it and it was on every night of the week. And you just knew it was appointment viewing. It was like Melrose Place, 7:30 on Tuesday.
It wasn't like a Channel 9 2020 broadcast where they act as if someone hits a six, it's the most unbelievable thing that's ever happened in world sport. It's Channel 10 gave the games respect and had smart callers who were talking to each other, and that Channel 7 has quickly turned to the, oh, get around him, how about this fella sort of stuff, which people don't like. Never mind that the games don't mean anything and there's too many of them and there's no bastard knows who, what player is what, and the import players. The import players are people you've never heard of.
That doesn't matter either.
Yeah, I know. I know you love it. I know you and I could be playing Big Bash.
It literally doesn't matter who. It doesn't matter who is in
the thing.
The jersey.
But yeah, so people don't care about any of the teams. The kids go to the games. They don't give a crap who hits the sixes. They're just cheering whatever sixes hit, and that's probably what's happening on the TV too. I dare say that whatever's happening at the moment, no, hardly anyone is actively watching Big Bash cricket. It's just on in the background while they're talking to someone, or it's on and they're watching it going, oh, another six, great.
I wouldn't mind seeing the numbers because
this is the thing. I'm glad you brought that up because the crowds are absolutely diabolical, but the ratings are still pretty strong. Now, when I say pretty strong, they're ranging from the 800 to tapping a million, which is still
That's insane.
That's still weak domination for a competition full of nobodies. The quality's really poor. But that's still 200,000-300,000 less than what Channel 10 was getting and what Channel 7 was getting in the first iteration of the Big Bash until they started stretching out the season and just trying to grab for more.
Yeah, there was that one season where Chris Lynn and Brendan McCullum were playing for the Brisbane Heat and you were getting 1.2 million people watching a Brisbane Heat game, which is just astronomical figures for provincial cricket. So I think
I'd love if anyone's watching or if anyone's those watching or listening, tell us what you think of the Big Bash, because Andrew and I are of a certain vintage and we don't take kids to the games or anything like that. So I'm sure as someone who's got a family and taking young kids to the game, it's probably a completely different thing, or watching it on the TV and getting really excited because it's cricket. But yeah, I'm genuinely curious as to which grown adults are like really deeply involved in the Big Bash. And I've asked this for years, Andrew. I've asked it for years.
I'm invested because I'll cricket. Watch cricket.
Yeah.
I don't care who who plays for what team. They can, this pool of players, like, great, chop and change. Could not give a shit who's wearing what colour either any night.
Just well, no one knows on. Anyway. So what's the difference if they bring up something?
So I was going to say, like my question about the about the tennis, and it only been some on free-to-air TV and other on Stan Sport, is the fact that this is not all on free-to-air anymore been a deterrent? And the figures probably suggest that it hasn't, but I think that it's had an impact on people's engagement because you knew that you'd put it on Channel 10 at 7:30 and there was a game on, whereas now you put it on and there might be one on or there might not. And there are a small percentage of Australians who have access to Foxtel and KO. It's nowhere near as big as what I assumed a couple of years ago.
It has grown substantially, but it's still a more very, very moderate share of the market. You're right.
And I wonder if that's there's a replay of Matlock. I thought I was going to be watching the cricket. And so then Matlock. You don't turn it on the next night.
Don't come into a sporting discussion and diss Matlock. Now, I think you're right. And cautionary tale here is England, because they moved all of their cricket behind a paywall and participation went into the toilet. Crowds for a little part have come right down, but they're building back up again. They've had to try the 100 to try and revamp their people's interests in cricket. And while not all of Australian cricket is behind the paywall now, you can still see quite a bit on the free-to-air. I think you're right that people, particularly with the Big Bash, people grew accustomed to just rolling up and, there it is. Like I said, it's on in the background. Let's have dinner and go, oh, what was that, you know? But I also think that while it was on all the time, that's why people didn't pay much attention to it. Like, it was on, but they weren't paying much attention to it. But,
And it wasn't too long. The season wasn't too long.
That's true. That's true. It wasn't dragging on and it wasn't, here's Heat V6s, round four, you know, sort of. Yeah. But anyway, let's do some more cricket, but let's have a happy one. You got one minute because we are reaching into our time constraints now. So you got 1 minute to tell the world why Usman Khawaja is the best batsman in the world and why, if he doesn't get to play in Hobart where you're about to head, it's obvious Justin Langer hates him.
So Uzi has been brilliant. There was a stat going around the other day that from 2015 onwards, there are only maybe 12 batters that have made 10 test hundreds, and Usman is one of them. So he is absolutely in the best six batters in Australia. In 2016, there was arguments for that he was the best batter in the world, and also maybe even the best all-form batter behind Coley and AB de Villiers.
So, he was hasn't he been playing? Why hasn't
don't
he
know.
Been
playing?
They've tried all of these. They've tried Harris. They've Harris at opener. Travis Head is there. Who's some of the other ones that came through?
Burns, Renshaw.
Burns, Finch. Renshaw. What was his name? Not Nicholson. It sounds like that, though. I can't remember.
Hilton Cartwright, Curtis Patterson.
Patterson, that was the one.
Look, Curtis Patterson, who has
Khawaja,
the Khawaja highest is batting average of all time.
Khawaja is better than every single one of them, yet he found himself on the outer for them. So what's going on? Is it as simple as people who watch the Amazon documentary saying that Uzi's a bit too lippy for JL's liking?
Don't know. Not going to speculate. Wouldn't have a clue. There's so Sean Marsh is one guy who performed brilliantly at domestic level and got a lot of opportunities at international level, but didn't perform as well as he would have wanted. Usman Khawaja didn't get all of those opportunities. Usman Khawaja has gotten a lot less opportunities than other cricketers. Why? Who knows? People have their own.
There is theories. One reason that would make sense.
There is. There's
because
always,
initially, remember, the leaked knock on Khawaja early, even when he was making runs, he's really bad fielder. And all of a sudden, and then he worked on his fielding and he was quite good. And then he was a passable fielder who was still a good bat. And there's we have concerns that he can't bat for very long. You know, he loses concentration. Then he started reeling off big 100 after big 100. And then it was just kind of, you dropped.
Spin.
Sorry. Yeah.
Spin. He can't play against spin.
Yeah. There's always been an excuse can't play to try. And, yeah. And he did. Yeah.
So, look, apart from the first test in the UAE where he made 80-odd and 100-odd, his overseas record is not great. But then again, not many current Australian batters is great. Look,
let's look at Virat Kohli's record over the last 4 years or so. Cricket is a definite home and away thing now. Numbers for everyone are miles above the away ones.
Yeah, and it's disappointing that he hasn't been able to, but you listen to him now talking and he seems to be in such a much better place. He is comfortable with the way that he plays, and so I think that obviously translates into watching him bat. He's not pushing and prodding, and he doesn't look as susceptible to nicking off early as he may have back in the previous iterations. But also he's come out and said, no, I expect Travis Head to come back in and take my spot, and that's okay. And I truly believe that...
But he has to say that, and he's going to believe that. But if Justin Langer comes to him and goes, all right, we're keeping Marcus Harris opening, who's had a complete bludger of an Ashes series, and Travis Head's coming back in because Travis Head's been okay. Okay, really good early, then okay. And Usman Khawaja has come in and is now 50 runs off the top, being the top run scorer for the entire series for everyone.
After having only played two innings.
And they're going to sit him down. It's just, it's always really, really annoyed me that they don't pick him. And I don't understand why no one's come out and given us a straight reason, which leads to all the other speculation. But it's been obvious from the start that he's been up against it. He's been held to a different standard than others in the same situation.
Yeah, and I think that he's shown that even though he is 34, I think, as I said, he's in the best six batters. He will go on the three tours of Asia, Pakistan, India, Sri Lanka, I think it is. He'll definitely go there. Most likely he will open the batting in those tests. Marcus Harris, his second innings in Melbourne and then his batting in Sydney, he looked a lot better. He faced a lot more deliveries. So George Bailey has shown since he's become selector that he will stick with someone. He'll pick and he'll give them the opportunity to stay. That's why there is an inkling that Harris may open the batting in Tasmania. If it were me, Usman Khawaja would definitely be opening the batting in Tasmania. Usman Khawaja would have opened the batting in Brisbane.
Mm.
And I think Travis
Head will come in. The bowlers have saved Marcus Harris's ass by just blitzing through England over and over and over again. So everyone kind of forgets, oh, Australia only made 270-odd. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. When the opposition haven't breached 300 in the series, then your batting is much less likely to come under scrutiny. But look, this is not an isolated thing. Jamie Siddons, Dean Jones, Brad Hodge. There is a lot
almost Darren Lehman. Well, Brad Hodge got his shot. And he delivered the runs that people wanted, and then he found himself gone as well. But
Matthew Elliott.
There's
players that came in and either did well or did not do well, but did not get a heap of opportunities, whereas others got more opportunities. Like, look at Damian Martin. He got 6 years in the wilderness because of one shot against South Africa when he was basically the only batter in
when
that
the team got rolled for about 110 or something, wasn't it? Chasing 120.
Yeah. Yep. And he was the only one that looked like making any runs, but
well,
he
I don't think
one
we've
rash
learned,
shot.
We've learned quite a lot that about Cricket Australia that they've got ways of doing things that not your average person probably wouldn't agree with. But more cricket, Andrew. A very, very quick one. Ross Taylor, New Zealand cricket icon, playing in his last test against Bangladesh, got his first. Is it Chris Latham? I can't remember the captain's name.
Tom.
Gave him a spell, his first bowl since October 2013 in the second test, last day of the second test today in New Zealand. He was bowling to Ebadot Hossain, who took all the wickets last week and took absolutely none this week. And Hossain played. It was the last wicket, Hossain, at the number 11. He played a fantastic number 11 shot and just skied the ball up in the air. Latham took the catch, and that was it. That was to win the test match. Ross Taylor, on his way out, made his name, made his career, made it everything as a really, really good high-quality batsman. Goes out taking the last week of the test. I just thought that was really nice. That was really cool.
Oh, it was brilliant. It was almost the crowd pretty much not taunted, but made Latham
convinced. Yes,
convinced. So it was similar to the Australia.
How would you not give him? How could you England not give him a run? How could you not give him a run?
The light had faded so
That's
much.
Right, yeah. The umpires had said no more pace.
No more pace. You've got to bowl spin. And he was like, righto, Roscoe, time for you to have a crack. Now, he didn't finish with a century. His 19 test centuries, which I think is the most for New Zealand. Definitely he's finished his career as the leading run scorer for New Zealand.
With some of the names that have been around, yeah.
Yeah, so Kane Williamson, Stephen Fleming, Brendan McCullum, Martin Crowe, John Wright are the six that have scored 5,000 test runs, and Ross Taylor is ahead of all of them. Sorry, he's second in centuries to Kane Williamson. Williamson's got 24, he's got 19, but he now has three test wickets.
And an average of nine or something, isn't it? I can't remember. It doesn't matter because we're talking about a good thing. Let's not get caught.
No.
Now,
three wickets at 16 for his
16
career.
I misread.
Here's a random stat for you. Of all cricketers to have taken a wicket with their last delivery in their career, he has the most test runs. So Aravinda De Silva was the one before that. He took a wicket with his last ball, but Ross Taylor has more test runs than Aravinda.
Oh, that's really cool. Congratulations, Ross. I know he's the regular watcher and listener, Andrew.
Absolutely, he is.
One.
I just want to quickly touch on one more cricket thing. So the Women's Ashes is coming up. They've had to move the one day, sorry, the T20s and the one days. It was going to start with the test match in Canberra, then go to the T20s and then the ODIs. But because
when's the first game?
20th of Jan. So there's three T20s in Adelaide on the 20th, 22nd and 23rd. The test match on the 27th in Canberra. And then the three one-dayers have been brought forward. There's one in Canberra on the 3rd of Feb and two in Melbourne on the 6th and 8th of Feb. The reason they've been brought forward is because after the completion of the Women's Ashes, all the players will be jetting over to New Zealand the ODI World Cup.
Rescheduled World Cup, yes.
Yes, they need to do 10 days quarantine. So what that does mean is if someone in either team and in the bubble that they will have catches COVID, they are going to be in a race against the clock to actually be able to play in the World Cup. So I'm curious as to how the one day games will go. They've brought them significantly forward. So they're finishing 10 days earlier than they would go into.
Why don't they just go over to New Zealand and play them while in quarantine? But then, yeah, never mind.
You're talking far too much sense.
I'm full of great ideas like that. Now
why didn't the men's team not play in Brisbane so they didn't have to quarantine? Like too much.
We have a message through from Michelle Andrew, who's complimenting us on our what she says is our color coordinated approach with the orange. Are you wearing orange or red?
It's red, baby, red.
All right, there you go. But anyway, we do like to look our best, Michelle. You're right.
AJ, talk to me about baseball.
No. One bad news thing and then two good news things because we're running really
bad news.
Bad news. Big time AFLW injuries. Izzy Huntington.
Boo!
Izzy Huntington from – now, I'm going to be fairly blunt here so you can clean up after. Izzy Huntington had her third major leg injury since 2019, so she's – got to be thinking about whether football is the thing for her. Bree Davey had her second ACL, the Collingwood captain, had her second ACL, and she'd have to be having the same sort of thoughts now. And Kate Lutkins, who was best on ground in last year's grand final for Brisbane, has a suspected ACL. I don't know if there's any updates on that yet, but knee injuries have been a massive, massive problem for the AFLW since they started. Concussions now are becoming an even bigger problem. Andrew, there is no solution, but what's the treatment? What's the management? What can they do? Is it moving the season to October, start in October and run till December, or what do you think?
There was a couple of interesting things that came out around the hardness of the ground and whether that had something to do with the people hurting their knees or I'm just trying to find in the preseason training, I believe there were three players who injured their knee. And then in the first round, we had three players in 2 days and they are three of the top 12, top 10 players in the competition. Now, there's been a lot of talk about ACLs in the women's game, particularly since the genesis of AFLW, because there's been quite a lot of injuries. Mm-hmm. And there's various theories. There's one about the biological, physiological makeup. So the women's hips being slightly wider, and so their legs pointing slightly inwards compared to male legs, which go straight down, and that put in a little bit more pressure on their knee. There are some suggestions. I was reading a couple of years ago, there were talks about links to the menstrual cycle, and then there's also the issue around training. So if you're not a full-time professional athlete, you are not able to prehab your body. So you're not building up your quad muscles and your muscles around your knee to give yourself the best opportunity to not bugger your knee when you do change direction.
Which was highlighted by AFLW inaugural premiership coach and former guest on The Sporting Discussion, Beck Goddard, who said that about Huntington it was, when she went down with her knee, she said, well, it's a 12-month recovery to come back for a nine-month, I think it was nine-month engagement for training season and then out for a six-month season. Or for a six-month season, or something like that. But the point I've just horribly misquoted was, she now has a year of trying to rehab her leg again. Bree Davy the same. Any of the players who do their knees is the same. But they are only considered on the books at the club for something like 6 months of the year, maybe even less. Nathan Burke, who is the coach of Bulldogs, he said that it frustrates him because he's literally not allowed to contact the players for 6 months of the year because they're not considered contracted or on the books. So players are going off doing their own work. And we saw Steph Chochi from Collingwood has retired from AFLW to continue her full-time job as a teacher because it's reliable income and she's not going to get, you know, knocked out or anything like that doing it. It's just such a – and we spoke very briefly about this last week, Andrew, where the AFL came out and said, here's our big plans for the women's game going forward, including we're going to make them all full-time professional and we're going to make them the most highly paid female athletes in Australia and all that. And like we said, they could do that tomorrow if they wanted to, and these problems, the injuries wouldn't go away, but the ability to handle them and the ability to rehab properly without having to eat into your own annual leave, for God's sake, or your sick leave from your job, just happen better. It's just managed so poorly.
It is. Yeah, so I agree. So Steph Kiochi is playing this year.
I thought she had time off. Maybe it was last year.
So there was something around her because she's a teacher, and there was something around that late last year which I'm trying to find. But no, so she is playing this year. But right.
I stand corrected on that. I thought she had set out the season to work, but players have done that.
A lot of players have. There's a couple this year that are sitting out because they are, let's say, police force or military. But it's just it's so unfortunate that's what people are doing. And so Erin Phillips came out this week and said that the season should start in October. So she's not keen on the January start. I haven't listened to the full discussion she had with Shani Layton and Sam Lane on an ABC podcast. I've got that ready to go for a walk in the morning. But that, I think, is an interesting suggestion, and I would actually go 2 weeks earlier, and I would have the AFLW season at this stage start in the pre-finals bye of the men's game, because there's not that many games going on in the men's there. So it's not going to be competing for airtime. That you're going to be able to show games, the women's game and then the men's, or the men's game and then the women's, on the same day. There won't be the crossover, and it allows the AFL to continue to dominate the back pages, which we know they want to do. Now, ideally, and in a perfect world, we have an 18-team, 17-round men's season and an 18-team, 17-round women's season that run concurrently, and we then have all of the state leagues running at the same time. That's at least 2 years away because we don't have 18 women's teams until the end. There's not 18 teams until end of this until next season, which is the end of this year. And yeah, I'd love to see that.
Also,
happen, but
that takes the state leagues out of action unless they're bringing in lots of players through as well. But anyway, look, we're not here to solve the problems of structure.
The knees. There will be questions asked about the hardness of the grounds. That's one thing that I've seen become more and more of a discussion point in the last couple of days.
Yeah, it's annoying to see this happen to good players. Yeah.
It's completely and utterly fucked. Now,
but it has also been.
We don't normally swear on a sporting discussion, AJ, but Izzy Huntington, Kate Lutkins, and Bree Davey, you can't, you just can't have a season where the players aren't playing.
But this isn't a surprise, which is what annoys me. This was obvious in season one, and they're just kind of, oh, well, we'll just ride out. But anyway, enough of that. That was a bad one. Andrew, I've got two good news ones to finish on. We are really pushing our time here, so I will be very, very quick. Back to the American football.
Yes.
Ron Gronkowski, who is the tight end for
the Gronk.
Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
I know the Gronk.
One of my favorite things towards the end of the American football season is the list of who needs to hit what milestones to activate contract bonuses.
So you need to have 17 touchdowns to get $800,000.
So-and-so in the last round of the season, so-and-so needs two touchdowns to activate a $1.5 million bonus, you know, that sort of stuff. Now, Gronkowski needed 85 receiving yards and seven catches in the last game of the season to get $1.39 million and activate that in his contract.
Were they playing a good team, and was it a game of any consequence?
It doesn't matter, because with 6 minutes to go in that game, they were up by 14, two scores. The game is basically over. And it didn't matter anyway, because they are where they are in the playoffs. Now, the coach has said to Tom Brady, the quarterback, okay, job's done, sit down, we'll put the backups in and away they go. And the next time Tampa Bay got the ball, he stood up, grabbed his helmet, went onto the field, and as he was going onto the field, got into a massive shouting match with the coaches about, no, I'm going out to do this. And then promptly...
Tom Brady did.
Yeah, and he promptly threw the ball to Gronkowski, who caught his 55th pass of the year and unlocked his bonus.
Yes! I love
it. So good. I love it. I love it. He said, no, I'm going to do this. I'm going to get him out.
I'm helping a brother out.
Extra. Yeah, I think that's really cool. We've just had we've got a message through from Ian Harkin again on the Twitter about the AFLW, Andrew, as I pad frantically waiting for it to load. He doesn't know what difference it would make starting AFLW in October. They're still going to be playing in the summer in rock hard fields. They should play in winter at the same time as the men, and they can maybe have their grand final the week the AFL has their pre-final. But, yeah, that's perfect state sort of stuff that we were talking about just then, don't you reckon? Yeah, but that's there's going to be much carnage between now and that actually happening because of the situation we've got at the moment. Now, the very last one, Andrew, a good point. Yeah, I spoiled you on it before because you wanted to talk about it. I wanted to talk about something else, but... Jen Beacom, 17-year-old Southport pitcher from Melbourne, Australia, as they've been saying all week on MLB.com. She was signed as a development player by the Melbourne Aces for next year's Australian Baseball League season. But they had an exhibition series against Adelaide just last weekend, and she came out in game two and pitched a scoreless inning First time a female has participated in an Australian Baseball League, let's say top shelf men's, it's not even a men's league because we'll get to that, game. So that was really cool. And what was even cooler was the reaction, because it was all over the news. Normally baseball in Australia only gets in the news if there's a fight in the States or if the Yankees win something or something like that. So this was really cool to see a 17-year-old girl who is throwing 84 miles an hour, about 135 Ks, faster Pat Cummins, if you're a cricket fan who's not really into baseball, faster than Pat Cummins, doing really well, throwing a massive curveball as well that the hitters couldn't touch and all that sort of thing. And this is the thing, Andrew. Yeah, go on.
I was going to say, I saw footage of the fastball and then the curveball, and then they did a sort of a split screen of those, and they showed the trajectory of the curveball and fastballs.
Yeah, pitching ninja did that. That's awesome. I love that stuff.
Fastball is anyone can try to throw a fastball. It's just throw ball straight. And pitching is a lot harder than it looks. But I spent a year as a terrible pitcher in a terrible competition, but we won the premiership, so who cares? And breaking balls were just the most difficult. Like, I could get the ball to move towards the batter and away from the batter and dead straight. I could not get the dip. I could not get that break on the ball. It is just so hard to do.
It's not an easy thing to do. Yeah.
No. To watch her do it was just so good.
It was really cool. There's a lot of good young talent in Australia in baseball, and she's a shining light. And, you know, the best part of it is, Andrew, baseball is not a men's/women's league. There's
it's the Australian Baseball League.
It's the Australian Baseball League. If you're good enough, you can play. That's why they've signed her. That's why Peter Moylan, the Aces coach, who is a former MLB player himself and commentates on the Atlanta Braves over in the States, that's why he signed her. John Deeble was there, former Australian coach, former Aces coach. He's also a scout for the Los Angeles Dodgers. There was some other scouts there as well having a look, because it is not, you know, it's a long, long way. It's just 17. Anything can happen tomorrow. Yep. However, if everything were to go according to plan, there is nothing stopping her from playing in the minor leagues and working her way up to the majors, because there's no gender line.
Yep.
Over there.
Now, you said she was throwing at 84 miles per hour, her fastball. Mm. What's the average?
She'd have to add probably 8 or 10 to that
for a 17-year-old to, let's say, to 25-year-old. So in that 8-year period when you hit the gym, you work on your technique, naturally, what would she add? Like, you'd think that she'd be able to add 5 miles.
Because it's coaching as well.
Yeah,
coaching about when to release and all that sort of stuff. So I wouldn't dare to try and predict how many more she could get. But if we're talking about the ability to increase it though. Oh, definitely. Yeah. I just thought that was really cool. That's a really cool thing to finish
on. That's awesome.
I think it's really cool. So eyes on Jen Beacom. Our mate Erin Delahunty, the best freelance sports journo in the world, has written a couple of things about her as well. She's been following her since she was in the under 12s.
Yes,
so under 16s, wrote about it in Crinkling. Oh, what am I doing? Oh, man, it's been a show. Anything else you want to say before we dip off?
If you like your netball and you are an insomniac, then you are in luck, because the Quad Series is coming up, and the games, the first one against the Silver Ferns is this Sunday at 3:15 a.m. Oof. And then against South Africa on Monday at 1 a.m. and Oof. Then against the English Vitality Roses at 6:30 a.m. on Wednesday. So there is a good time. And all of those are on Fox Sports, and they are on KO Freebies as well. And which
also, Erin Delahunty, the best freelance sports journo in the world, is going to be hosting Instagram live
half-time
chats.
As
well. Half-time chats and those sort of things, yes. So check out her Instagram as well. All right. That might do us, Andrew. Thanks for watching, everyone. Thanks for listening. Thanks for tuning in. Remember, our socials, we're at ASD_radio on Twitter or facebook.com/asportingdiscussion. If you want to check our Passion Project website, go to www.asportingdiscussion.com.au. Leave us a voice message. We'll put a link in the show notes. We want more people to get involved, so we'll do Twitter spaces and things like that. Comments are great, but we'd like to engage with people as well. And remember, we'll be back. When are you back from the Hobart Test?
I'm back on Sunday, so we'll be back next Tuesday or Wednesday, and I will have so many stories to tell about
you better be that
beautiful, beautiful, picturesque Belrive Oval and
the Usman wonderful Khawaja.
Hospitality.
Usman Khawaja carrying the drinks as 12th man. Yes. You better take some good
drinks better than anyone.
Yeah, he's so elegant. Take as much video as you can, Andrew. We'll see you next week. Thanks for tuning in, everybody, and we'll see you soon.